Got great ideas, but no idea how to build a website? Get Bluehost. Their AI design tool creates high-quality WordPress sites super fast. Whether you're a blogger, influencer, or launching a side hustle, Bluehost helps boost your growth with built-in marketing and e-commerce tools. Upgrade to cloud to get 100% uptime and 24/7 security to stay online all the time. Why wait? You've got the vision. Make it real. Visit Bluehost.com to get started.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the defense against the Browns. Joining me for that, of course, is Denard Melton of the Fire Zone Show. Denard, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Always a pleasure. I'm could be better after that game, but there's something cathartic about watching film, even from a loss, that makes me get over it quicker. And you know, we're a day past, and it's now firmly part of history. It's not something I'm trying to avoid, like, you know, before I was doing this kind of work and just avoid news for a week and retreat into video gaming or watching movies or whatever I might do otherwise. How about you?
Yeah, just getting out of the house and not thinking about football is always a good way to decompress and make sure nothing is obscuring your ideas of what you're about to view. So always good to go with a fresh start.
Yeah. It is definitely something you want to not come with preconceived notions into watching film. It's one of the most important things. Particularly in scoring offensive line play, the thing I always like to say is I want to be surprised by the observations. I want to be surprised by the data as it rolls out. I don't want to go in thinking, oh, Daniel Falele had a crappy game. And that's one way you can do that is don't make definitive statements until you've actually watched the film. Like, do not make definitive statements, and then you won't whipsaw yourself in terms of these things happening. So I never talk about offensive line as it was played out in the game until I've actually had a chance to go through and score it play by play. All right. Well, second part of the show here, we always talk about individual play. Who would you like to talk about first?
So I would like to talk about Mr. Robinson, Mr. Tavon Robinson, the defensive tackle, defensive and outside linebacker, whatever he is this week. He has the last few weeks, I would say even beginning of this season, as his snaps have picked up, I've been impressed. Last year, I was wondering why they picked him. Mm-hmm. But now I'm starting to get the vibe of they're trying to make him a McPhee-type defensive end where he can kind of be the hammer in certain situations. He can be the nickel rush guy, like you were saying earlier. So I've been very much impressed by that gentleman.
Yeah, career high in snaps in this game. The Ravens really needed it. They needed rest at outside linebacker. They needed rest on the defensive line. They kicked him in to play a number of rush nickel and one rush dime snap to have him, you know, with him on the inside. And I thought he did very well in this game. Iron grip. When he gets his hands on somebody, usually they're going down. He hasn't. I don't know. I can't remember a missed tackle this year. Maybe he's had someone somebody could point out, but I can't remember one. Just looked very good. And this game, he knocked down the quarterback three times, if I recall correctly. Although he might have been the one who had one negated on a penalty. No, that was Washington actually had one negated by a penalty. But otherwise, he's really doing the job as a pass rusher way more than I expected. I kind of expected him to be this good a run defender. How about you?
Definitely his pass rush skill has been very impressive. Like again, last year he was very good against the run. I think that was why he was brought in. I think he's starting to blossom. If we ever go to a traditional more of a 4-3 end, he's kind of the prototype of what that looks like because he can do both.
That's interesting. I don't see that in the future, but you never know. You know what they do. What they do, because they play 4-2-5 all the way, all the time, you know, they're basically always trying to stop the run in nickel. They really rarely go to the base. If they go to base, it's against a team. Usually they'd have to be trailing, and the other team would have to still be running it down their throats. Mm-hmm. And they fortunately have not been in that position very often. In fact, the Ravens of the Harbaugh era have not been in that position very often in their whole history. But it has happened occasionally, and it's nice to have those extra down linemen when you do have that. Yeah. But otherwise, you're asking your guys in an even front to do a lot of the things that a 4-3 end has to do.
Yeah, and they do a very good job. Especially that's why you need the Travis Joneses of the world, who can eat up two blocks. That's the most important thing, is that you've got a guy up there who's at the point of attack. He's not getting moved.
Yeah,
and you see that in a lot of other teams where those guys are getting moved all over the place. You don't see that up front with the Ravens.
Yeah, it's obviously it's something they take very seriously, is their run defense. They've always had, you know, oversized noses relative to some other teams who've tried to get away with pass rushers at nose and trying to have that even on rundowns. But it doesn't always work so well for them that they can get pushed around. Let me pick a player. I will talk about let's get Kyle Hamilton out there, because obviously everyone I think is frustrated with the play that wasn't, you know, the second to last play defensively of the game. And you can really see it in Kyle's, the way he laid on the football field for extra time. I don't think that sort of self-pity is really a good thing necessarily, and they're trying to get him up. But he's the only guy who was making plays out there for the Ravens in a lot of ways. I mean, Tavius Robinson played well. A few other players, you know, made some plays here and there, but he was one of the really consistent guys out there for the Ravens who made tackles in the backfield. He was an effective pass rusher. He makes such quick tackles after the pass is made, and he takes away the strong side of the football field where he is located in the big nickel, by being that great lateral defender who just seems unblockable by any wide receiver and most tight ends.
He's a human eraser on screens. Wide receiver mm-hmm. screens, like, teams just can't run him when he's around. And it's kind of funny to watch. And I'll be the first to say I was not high on him coming out, because he was coming out of Notre Dame, and it just – I didn't think it fit what they were looking to do, and he has been amazing, and he's still growing, and hopefully he just continues to get better and better every day, every week.
The drop, really unfortunate, obviously. I do like the fact that he's in the right place. I like how he played that ball. You know, and it was an overthrow, but he obviously could see right out of Winston's hand. Throw was a little bit, it wasn't quite pressured, but the pressure was going to get there. It was a ball out quick. But the ball was overthrown, and he tracked it extremely well. He ran right to the football as opposed to running to the player. And the play he had in the backfield was similar as well. And I'll come back to that in just a second. On the play that he dropped for the interception, but just extremely well tracked ball. It's just a shame as hell, obviously, he can't collect it.
I don't think people understand how hard that is for a DB to do.
Yeah.
First of all, we're not built. We don't do that every day in practice. We're not coming steaming 100 miles an hour and flipping our hands like a wide receiver to catch the ball. So obviously he's going to catch it in the way that he's used to. Coming in that direction, hauling, I'm sorry. Trust me, he's an all-pro. He should make that play. But that is a very difficult play to make. Man coverage, running 15, 20 yards across the field, and your hands are doing this. They're bouncing.
Yep.
They're bouncing up and down. And all of a sudden that ball comes in as hard as Jameson goes. And, you know, that stuff happens. But it's not as easy as a catch as him coming from safety and coming downhill. That's what we practice. coming down here and making that play, coming down at an angle and making that play, going dead lateral and being a wide receiver and trying to,
You know, you hear that said a lot, what you said about the ball bouncing around, because you hear that a lot said about outfielders tracking fly balls. And obviously that's it. That's at the heart of their job description. You can't catch the fly ball as an outfielder. You don't play that position anymore. You don't play it for very long, but they have the same problem. If you're running hard, the ball is bouncing. And particularly if you're getting over near the stands in any way, you got a chance for that bouncing to really affect you with any other sort of distracting element to that play. Could be another player coming at you as well, but yeah, it's a tough thing. I want to go back to one other play, though, by Hamilton in this game, because last year, of course, Hamilton had the great play in Baltimore where he came from 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. They baited the Browns and Watson with a wide receiver, sorry, a tight end, Njoku, out to the left side to get a pass. Hamilton bolted in, no attempt to go after the quarterback at all. He was running to a interception vector, basically. And he tipped the ball right up. He knew exactly how to get it back into his own hands and tipped it right to himself like a basketball player going for his own rebound in some way. Came down with it. Of course, he just walked into the end zone for a 20-yard score. And might have been their first offensive play for the Browns in that game. Did the same thing to Njoku this year. A different quarterback, because you got Watson. Instead of Watson, you have Winston. Same thing. He tipped that ball that was headed out to the left to Njoku, and you could see it veer off its trajectory. And obviously a pass defense there for Hamilton. But I love that play. I love that they're able to do that. I love that they're able to get results twice against two different quarterbacks with it. And everybody needs to see that once, I think.
Yeah. I will say being more in nickel allowed them to have Hamilton coming blitzing off the side, off the edge more, which obviously is when they're at their strength. And maybe, just maybe, seeing that they'll get back to more of that.
Let me ask you that question directly. You prefer Hamilton as big nickel to dime, then, if you have the choice of the two things?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it gets back into that weird Chuck Clark world where he's playing dime linebacker, and now they start trying to run it down their throats, and they're getting 5-6 yards a pop. And I see horror films of that happening. So, no, I don't want to see a heavy dose of Hamilton as a dime linebacker. It just doesn't work for me.
All right, I'm going to take the other side of this argument here, because I really love Hamilton at the dime. The reason I wouldn't want him at dime isn't because I'm worried about the run. It's because most of the time they do it, it's the Ravens either have a big lead and they're just safely defending out of dime, or the Ravens have a obvious passing situation, meaning a 2nd and 10, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 7, whatever it might be, where I dare you to run is the appropriate response from the defense, you know, in that situation, especially with a tackler like Hamilton. I mean, am I worried that they might get an extra yard and a half? Maybe. Am I concerned that that's going to give them the first down? Not at all in that situation. But the loss, I think, comes if you have Hamilton in the slot. He takes away that screen game on that side, takes away the strong side of the football field effectively for what can be up to 3 receivers on that side. Because you have to have one on the other side, and you almost always have a back. But there can be 3 receivers on that side a lot of the time. And, man, is it nice to have Hamilton out there negotiating traffic for that, because he's an extra tackle and a lot of times a fumble waiting to happen when he makes a tackle from behind.
Absolutely. You asked me earlier about what I would do if I were, like, scheme-wise with this team to kind of make those things, you know, make changes. How would I go about it? I would go back to the basics. I would go back to when they were in scramble mode that first time when Hamilton was a rookie. You put them at the line of scrimmage. And I'm not saying it's because of him. It allows everyone else to get comfortable. He does what he does best. He takes away this part of the field. I don't have to worry about that. Now I can scheme everyone else to be like, okay, I got him over here. guys, we just got to take care of this. With Hamilton now in the middle of the field, now the offense has a choice. They can go left, they can go right. They're going to stay away from him when he's in the middle of the field. Now, if I got him on the right side of the field, you're going to go left most likely. Now I can tilt. I can do different things. I can run zone on one side, man on the backside. I can do some different things instead of him just being in the middle. I want to be able to move him, and I think being in basic nickel allows you to kind of have him as a rover on both sides of those on the field.
Okay, so the question, you've probably just done it, but the question you need to answer for me when you want Hamilton, you want my guy, my dime guy, back out at big nickel, which I'm okay with,
yep,
generally speaking. But the question you got to answer for me is, who's your second guy to play that weak side spot on obvious passing downs? And you're effectively saying you want to go back to a committed nickel because you think Trenton Simpson is good enough, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Put words in your mouth.
I think he's – I coming out of college, his strength was coverage because he came – that's what he played his first couple years at Clemson. He was that rover nickel.
Yep.
For a couple years, he played safety. That's what he did. The only reason why he moved inside is because they were light at linebacker. And Jeremiah Schroeder Jr. is god awful inside, but that's another conversation to have at some point. But he got moved inside because they were terrible at linebacker. He's very good in coverage. He's just not having put in those situations because he's technically still a rookie in their eyes. I think the more and more they allow him to be in coverage, I think they'll be better in coverage because of it.
Well, that was the big adjustment that Orr made this season is in week three, they went to dime. They hadn't done it the first 2 weeks. They'd been playing committed nickel with Simpson, few snaps where they had somebody else there, but they went to Hamilton, and that effectively made room for Ardarius Washington on the field, who'd been very limited in terms of snaps and had been playing well. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I got to have Ardarius Washington after Simpson, but I think he presents a different set of challenges on obvious passing downs to quarterbacks in terms of what they need to do and what they should be afraid of. But Washington hasn't really put the fear of himself in anybody by actually catching the football yet.
He's a nice player, but I think having Simpson on the field will help Roquan, which in turn will help your safety play not have to be so concentrated in the middle. They can help on the outside. See, when you have guys like Hamilton's great where, you know, if he's going to be a dime linebacker, he's fine. But if you don't have a linebacker mentality, your drops are going to be off. You're always going to be chasing stuff. And if you watch on film, there are a lot of mistakes happening with those dime guys and nickel guys when there's extra DBs, because in your DB mind, if a guy goes inside, I'm going to chase him. As a linebacker, if a guy goes inside, I know I have a guy inside. I'm just passing him. So that's where it's just like, yeah, you can have all these DBs on the field, but they're not used to passing guys off. They're not used to zone coverages where, hey, if this guy hooks zone here, if I push the flat, I got an opportunity to make a play. They're thinking like DBs, well, I got to stay with my guy. Well, now that flat guy's opening, and now you got a running back out there getting 10 yards on 3rd and 9 for no reason. So it's just, I think they can be better. I think they're better when they're bigger in the middle of the field with linebackers. And I think Trenton Simpson gives them that in terms of matching up with a running back out of the backfield. I think he'll get better with tight ends, maybe with the best one, but he's a big enough body where you're not getting killed by these 8 and 9 yard stick routes that these guys are running on your 5'9" safeties.
Mm-hmm. I'm not denying that's something you need to really be aware of. Hamilton, I think, gives you more in the middle of the field there than that being very long. He gives a hulking presence to throw over. Obviously, a lot of what the Ravens have been short on is between level two and level three. So saying, yeah, the safety play will improve behind him because you put Trenton Simpson out there, I don't know why it would if it didn't when you had Kyle Hamilton out there, who's kind of the reason he moved there. It was a concession to move him there because the middle of the field was so weak. That's how I would see it anyway.
Correct. They're trying to address a problem, but they're creating another problem, which is the deep end routes.
Okay. All right. So, fair enough.
So you've that's what I'm saying. You keep Hamilton in the nickel. Now you know half of the field's gonna be, they ain't gonna attack that unless they really have to. So now you can go back to the other side. It's like, okay, I can play coverages just a little bit different. But having him in the middle of the field all the time, now I can go outside. I can run a route where I can get him out of the middle of the field and run a dig right behind him. Now in that nickel, he's not getting chased out of there. He's not getting ran out of there because he's sitting there and the DB behind him can now be a little more aggressive with those dig routes and be tighter on coverage. Because now that linebacker is sitting in that quarterback's line of sight, and now that ball's going to come out maybe a little bit higher, a little bit harder. It's all length. And that's what they had last year with Queen and Roquan and Hamilton and Geno and even Marcus Williams when he was one-arm wingman. There was so much length on the field that it was hard to get through a lot of bodies because there's a lot of length. This year, not so much. You got 5'9", dude. You got Marlowe, who's not really a nickel corner, coming inside to play nickel sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of hodgepodge. And now with Mollett's back, like, okay, that's great and all, but still doesn't solve the immediate, like, functionality of the defense, in a sense.
I definitely agree with that Mollett is not the solution that's going to fix everything for the
right
team. I do have a question whether Mollett is even a better player than Washington at this point, but it could turn out to be that way. And, you know, what the coaches are seeing right now in practice is fine. Washington is misplaced on the back end at strong safety. I still believe. I think his best position is still slot corner. Mm-hmm. That's where he won the job. He beat out Mollett for the job effectively. Mollett had been hurt for a period of time, but beat out Mollett for the job last year, then got hurt after a week and a half, lost his job again. On the back end, Washington this summer was very effective finding the football in the air, extremely effective. After Humphrey, he really came on and was the second best interceptor at the end of camp, right? But I still don't think, based on his size, that he's the ideal guy to be playing strong safety. He just might be the best option we have right now. Very weak group of players, and that's unfortunate because then he's being pushed into shoehorned into a role that is not ideal for him.
You'd be really missing Geno Stone right now.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, this is a team. There's two things about this team that are kind of frustrating. Is they could afford a little bit of mistackling on this team in the name of better coverage. So if you got an idea of a safety has some problems tackling, and Eddie Jackson, by the way, exactly meets this description, except he's really not the cover guy. He's not the cover guy. But if you had a guy who's good at coverage and can't tackle, and that's Geno Stone to a T, then he's an ideal guy to get on the team this season. The other thing that's also a trade-off they could make is giving up some of this great run defense in the name of better coverage. And they have to do some specific things, but maybe trying to get delayed read steps. And you're really playing a dangerous game once you try and get in the mind of a great player. But trying to, delay the read steps for Smith and have him be prepared to take some deeper drops to the middle of the field. Is something. And first thing I'd do is I'd stop this crapola with having him at the line of scrimmage in simulated pressure. I don't think it really helps enough. I really like what Tampa did better at that, having like a 2 yards deep off last year. You like that as a linebacker?
Yeah, I have never been. My old defensive coordinator always told me, if you're going to bluff, you better get where you supposed to be getting. So you better not be in there playing around. You don't get where you belong, because then I'm going to take the responsibility away from you and just sit you where you belong. And I couldn't agree more. I wish, and I know this will make some Ravens fans not like, why would you put Hamilton back there? But if you want to stop the nonsense, you put Hamilton back a strong safety. And you make, like you said, and sacrifice a little bit of that run game and a little bit of that, give up a little bit of that screen game and allow Washington and Mollett to run the nickel. Because last year, when Mike McDonald wanted to put the lid on teams who threw it a lot, He put Hamilton back there. Hamilton, I would say 60%, 70% of his snaps, he'd be deep safety. Like against the 49ers, he was deep a heck of a lot of times. He might have been, there were certain situations where he was still up, but he was that deep safety a heck of a lot of time. Against a couple other passing teams last year, he was a little bit more of the deep safety in a lot more of those situations. I think you've got to figure out where you can put him that will stabilize something on this defense.
Well, it is one of the choices they have to make. And realistically, that would be definitely a sacrifice in run defense. It would be a pickup in pass defense, I think. I just think his impact being deep is a lot less. And I also, you know, the other thing I really like is I like him playing different positions in the same game, because it gives the defensive coordinators nuts. If he's at least doing that, that's something. The 49ers game you mentioned, the reason that Hamilton ends up being on the back end is when they're in a base package for starters. Mm-hmm. So he's back there then. And I know you know that. It's the people here is that, you know, if you have three defensive linemen on the field, then you almost always only have four defensive backs, and then Hamilton is forced to go back and play safety under the situations because he ain't going to play corner.
Even in their 4-2-5, I would put him back on the back end and just rotate Mollett and Washington as a nickel slot, and you give up that force, but I think it makes you a little bit better defensively overall. Like you can put a lid on things.
It's definitely one of the things I'm going to say about this show is Darnold has an idea of why Kyle Hamilton should be playing strong safety that you'll want to hear. But this definitely is a good, what do you call it, teaser for this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, who's your next guy? Who would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about Trenton Simpson. I think he has played as well as you can ask him to play in the ever-changing landscape of what the D-line has been the last few weeks. He's been forceful against the run. He's doing what he's being asked to do with running the foot within the pass coverage when he's out there. I wish they would use him more, because he's an athlete I think we can use more in the blitz game and bringing pressure without sacrificing coverage or anything like that. I would like him used more going into the latter part of this season, because I think he's earned that route, that right, and he's played that well, particularly against the run.
He's been a very good run fit player. So I'm right there with you in terms of praising that element of play. Been a very good tackler. You know, he's been one of the players along with Hamilton and along with Roquan that are on real heaters in terms of tacklers. Roquan finally got his streak of consecutive tackles without a miss broken this last game, but he had 59 in a row going into this game where he'd put somebody on the ground. And I think he made eight and missed one in this game. So it wasn't bad or anything. And what we've seen from Simpson as a great run fit player has been no problem. I think we've seen good things, particularly relative to the other inside linebackers and what he could provide in coverage. Pretty good to go back to week one. He got his hands on the football twice, I think. One was the pass that Mahomes caught himself. Mm-hmm. And the other one was about the only PD that the inside linebackers had in a very long night of being picked on, where he was right there with the receiver instead of like literally every other inside linebacker being about 9 inches behind that point, trying to cover these breaks off the player that was their responsibility coming off the bunch formation. Yeah, frustrating as hell to see this happen time after time. But, you know, I think we're getting to a point where he's one of your best 11 as you start to subtract DBs one at a time from this group. You know, the DB group, one of the things about it is they could make up for weakness at a lot of other positions. That was the mantra as we exited camp and were getting ready to set the roster for the regular season and all was, boy, isn't it great to have this deep group of safeties because you can use them as a dime back. You can use them as a slot corner. If you run short on corners, you've got that fixed. You don't really need Simpson for all these snaps. Now it's like, well, where are the good defensive backs left? You know, the good corners are hurt. Yet Stevens left. I guess if you want to include him in the good corner group. But now it's like, well, we're searching for 11 good football players.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of come to Jesus meetings happening today. Yep. And tomorrow as they formulate this game plan. I mean, is it to that point where you're thinking maybe having a Dean Pease call it and show the young man how to manage a game from start to finish? And I'm not saying he's not going to get that role back next year, but I feel like this is where we're going.
You know, it wouldn't be the craziest thing to do something like that. I mean, you know, this Harbaugh never gets credit for anything. He just gets vitriol and hate. And the guy, surprising, his face doesn't look like any number of monsters the way he gets acid sprayed all over him all the time by fans. But it was one of the really brilliant moves that he did to send McDonald to Michigan for a year internship, mm-hmm. you know, calling the plays there. And, you know, in some ways it's AAA. In some ways it's just a lateral league, you know, with the level Michigan was playing at for a near national title level that year. That was an unbelievable thing. And having Orr being on Sumter, didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Internship would have been a very reasonable solution before the season started. And now I'm not sure that you can undo it without losing him. But you tell me, maybe Zach Orr is kind of Raven for life, I think of it as. Do you think you could hold on to him as a linebackers coach / defensive coordinator in waiting if you made that move?
I don't. He can come back. I think the issue is the staff is weak. And when you don't have a very strong group to support your defensive coordinator, then there's always kind of that those rumors is those, well, he doesn't know, my coach doesn't know. It festers, and then guys are always pointing fingers at each other. I mean, we've seen it for years when we've been the best defense. We've seen Cleveland. We've seen guys point fingers like,
yep,
we don't know what they're doing. We don't know what we're doing. You're watching it all unfold with a bunch of guys that should know what they're doing, but it's an absolute mess.
If you just watch the Jets this year, you want to see a dysfunctional organization, you know, making all kinds of decisions based on whatever the quarterback says, and the owner, who's probably about the least informed person in that case, also making those choices. Robert Saleh would have been a great guy to bring to town here. But how about this? My project, I don't want to call it this now. I just realized this is not a good thing. But my 2025 project for the Ravens ownership, the way I want money spent for this team, is to go out and put together the best group of coaches from outside the organization that they can assemble. Give me your dream team of who you want. And at least for 1 year, we're going to pay some guys and we're going to try and grow a new internal culture of coaching at each position group the way we need to. And we'll hire at the top end of this. And you're going to lose some people over this because the current guys obviously are not so great that they're going to be holding on to their positions necessarily. Yeah. But you probably bring in a new guy for the secondary for starters.
Yeah, that's a mess.
And maybe you bring in a new defensive line coach. The offensive line coach they have is a very old guy. And Warhop might be somebody that can last another year or two. But what they really need is they need a young, well-thought-of, probably current, you know, recently retired offensive lineman, let's put it that way, who earned his time in the trenches. I mean, Kevin Zeitler might be a good guy to do it when he retires. Or pick somebody else. Travell Wharton is around right now. He might be the guy. But they didn't go to him, you know, when Coach D got sick. So it kind of tells me that they probably don't think he's ready. But, you know, one thing I hate about people spending my cap is that you're spending my money as a season ticket holder. Spend Bisciotti's dollars on assistant coaches, and then you're not spending my money. You're not pissing me off, but you're spending money that actually can be added without any cap implication to making the team run well. Hit mute if you would for a second here while you're moving around, Denard, and we'll get this set in a second. But anyway, it would be something I'd like to see. I don't know if Bisciotti's willing to put $10 million of one-year salary into a set of assistant coaches that would presumably bring that new culture to the Ravens, but I think it would be a big investment in Harbaugh in part. I mean, you're already paying a coach a lot of money. He's a good coach. He's built good staffs in the past, but part of what really made it run for Harbaugh was the fact that they were always very well structured in terms of succession plans to bring in good people. They've never had a defensive coordinator stumble in this way. Not really since Madison anyway. And he wasn't bad. I mean, this is the first time that there's been that kind of stumble.
It's a stumble, but it's also seems like it's been, I feel like they got lucky with the Mike McDonald hire.
Okay.
And the staff that he had with him. Like, they got lucky. They got Anthony Weaver. They had a whole bunch of guys that perfect storm for individuals who should have had jobs elsewhere last year that just didn't have them because of, you know, issues, you know, around the league or whatever might have been going on. But this staff lacks experience in key places, and the draw is not there to bring in guys, I feel like, that are difference makers.
I wholly disagree with that comment. I think the Ravens defense and working under Harbaugh is one of the best places. First of all, let's say you're 32 years old and you're the hot young defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. This is a great place to be. First of all, you're always going to be showed up by a great team. You got Lamar Jackson on the other side playing quarterback that is helping your defense. Mm-hmm. You got a coach you might be able to replace 5 years from now if you want to wait that long. And if you don't, the Ravens are going to be playing great ball and you're going to be a hot ticket. Look at the last few Ravens coordinators to get out of town and find other jobs. They all have.
Oh, absolutely. I agree what you're saying with that. But here's where this is where that belief of complementary football comes in play. And you can't have a high scoring offense and a high adverse risk defense at the same time. And we're trending in that way because we're blitzing and we're zone blitzing and we're looking to make plays. What made us good last year was we had a defense where they understood their role. They understood that they let them have what they were going to have from the 30 to the 30, and then we're going to make you kick a bunch of field goals. And they were stout, and they said, we're not going to take chances. We're not going to blitz ourselves into problems. We're going to let you make the problems. If you make plays, great, but it's going to be a war from the 25-yard line in. Like, you're going to have to earn every point you get next to us. This year, it's a revolving door. It's unimaginary coaching that people as a red zone guy, it's like watching this team pull teeth when they're in there and they're doing the things that they're doing. And it's maddening. It's frustrating. And that is a lack of experience and a lack of coaching and guys being undisciplined. The defense has been one of the most undisciplined teams I've watched as a Ravens defense since probably the last year or two of Weddle.
Of Weddle. So this is in the Pease era we're talking about now.
Yeah. When they were really undisciplined on the back end and in their linebackers, it was just stuff going on all over the place.
Yeah, Pease had a real big aversion to Dime that I was never a fan of. But anyway, even when he had guys that weren't the best coverage linebackers, but he did have Zach Orr, and that was, you know, one of the things that I really like the fact that Orr has been able to move to the Dime, because I think it's an adaptation that is not natural for him. And I don't know if he's told to do it. I don't know if Harbaugh said, look, we're going to the Dime, and I, much as you want to have this, we need Kyle here because middle of the field is caving in on us and we need Hamilton doing more for us there. That conversation may change because they're very short on football players now. But I really like the fact that he made that change. And I honestly, in some ways, I don't care whether he's forced to do it or not, because I think they were effective, more effective when they did. I mean, the 5-game winning streak was accomplished with the Dime. It was Lamar Jackson going crazy too, but yeah, you know, it was accomplished with the Dime.
Oh, absolutely. I have no issues with the Dime in terms of using it as a spare package. I just think sometimes teams get a little too happy with it and it sets them up for failure later.
Okay. All right. I love it. So the Ravens have done it most. And I think basically if you're going to play Dime, commit to the freaking Dime.
Commit. You got to be 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And the greatest teams of all time, that's exactly what they've done. The 2000 Ravens played 34.5% Dime and quarter. They played 55 quarter snaps during the year, 7 DBs. And the 2019 Ravens played 44% Dime defense that year, largely because they had a bunch of big leads, but they also had a player who fit the position very well in Chuck Clark and a guy who, you know, had a great year. I think they have the right guy for that spot right now. If they want to do it, they have to decide if that's who they are as a football team. And it is possible that just they don't have enough good secondary players to commit that sixth defensive player to the weak side linebacker spot.
And that's why I feel like Trenton Simpson should be on the field.
All right.
Because you don't have enough secondary guys to justify him not being on the field.
I do respect that opinion. Let me bring up one more player to talk about, and then we'll move to some questions here. But Eddie Jackson, we can't not talk about the game he had here. I don't know when he found out he was going to be the free safety in this game, but it was too late. and it might be 5 years too late, because he really hasn't been a good player during the last four and a half seasons so far. He's given up way over 10 yards a target now over that period. And when I say way over, he's at about 11 yards per target this year. He's 10 yards per target and change the last 4 years combined. That's not the guy I want at free safety. And he's part of all three of the touchdowns in this game. Two of them he gave up directly, and the third one he gave up on a missed tackle after the play, where he could have had him down at about the 4 yard line. Very frustrating game. And that being said, there were some good things about it. He was in the right place to try and make some plays.
Mm-hmm.
Got his hands up in the area of the football. Last year, or 2 years ago, I think, really, when Patrick Queen had a run like this, people were all over with praise for Patrick Queen getting his hand on the football a little bit before Roquan showed up, and then some things started clicking at a higher level.
I will say this about Eddie Jackson. Yes, he was torched consistently all season. But in this game in particular, he was around the football.
Mm-hmm.
He was better than Marcus Williams has been all year.
Yep.
He was consistent enough where he had opportunities to make football plays. And that's all, as the coaches, I can ask, is you be consistent enough to be in position. Now, that's where talent takes over. And if you're a talented individual, you make those plays. And that's what you paid Marcus Williams to be in those roles, to make those plays, and he's not. So now you've gone with the bargain basement of Eddie Jackson, and it's hurting you. So, you know, I understand. He's not great, but he's not horrible. I just find this funny. I'm thinking about this right now, but if you want to keep Hamilton back there, I mean, you can always bring in Jamal Adams to play the slot nickel and run situations. You're looking to solve problems. And if you can solve it, I'm not saying he's going to come in here and change anything, but if you're not trying to lose anything in the run game while protecting yourself in the pass game, he's a forced nickel that you don't have. He also has an attitude that no one else on this team has. I'm not asking him to come in here and make 35 snaps, 40 snaps. I'm coming here and make 15 impactful, trash-talking something to get some motivation, get some spice going on defense. It's just lost sheep.
Okay, he is actually cut by the Titans now, so he's available. Yes. He's on the street.
Yeah.
So, if you're looking at solutions and you bring somebody into the vet minimum, I would still hate it.
No, I'm not saying like go out and that's gonna, like I said, change the rule. But if you're looking to solve a problem, that's a solution. That is better than anything else on your team right now.
You want him ahead of Mollett, ahead of Washington at that spot?
Yes.
Okay. I'm probably in the other category. I'm probably in a no.
Understood.
It's okay. Yeah. We respect each other's opinions on this. Yeah. I just think the need of the team is clearly at free safety. So I want a guy who's hopefully towards the end of his career, still has a little something left in the tank. Eddie Jackson just is not that guy. And Marcus May of Miami might be. There are a few other guys who are making almost nothing who could
be. I saw something about Holland might be available.
That's a big one, and I don't think he's cheap, but let me check.
I don't think he's cheap.
cheap. But, I don't think he's cheap.
Yeah, I don't think he's cheap. I think he's got 2 years left in his deal.
It's okay if he's got 2 years left. He's only got this year left. Oh. And he's not too bad, honestly. He's at $3.36 million. So for the rest of the year, they're going to pay him about $2 million. That's an amount I'd be willing to spend. He's only got three accrued seasons. So he's still on his rookie deal. You might have to really give something up in terms of, I didn't realize that's where he was still, but it seems like he's been in the league a lot longer than that, honestly.
He seems like he's been in here for like 6-7 years. Yeah. But yeah, those are the type of guys like a Roquan Smith that you're willing to throw a second round pick at.
That's too much for me, but there's something I would trade for Javon Holland. That's interesting. That's a very interesting idea. I wonder what Miami would want. I'd like to hear that. Unfortunately, they won that game against the Cardinals, right? They came back and won the game against the Cardinals. So the Cardinals beat them.
No, yeah. They came back and won that game.
All right. So, in a way, that's unfortunate. You really hope your potential trade partners have lost some games. I guess Buda Baker has been another guy who's been suggested.
He would be interesting, but the way they play defense in Arizona, it would not be a scheme fit whatsoever.
Okay.
I feel like what they're doing down in Miami still kind of fits what we do here. So it wouldn't be as a big learning curve coming in that direction.
All right. When I told everybody you're going to be on the show tonight, we got a big influx of questions. So I want to hit a couple of these up if we can.
Yep.
Okay. Eldon Dehan. This seems like it's more of a statement, so we'll just let it stand as that. I've watched the NFL for 60 years or isn't ready for the DC position. Guys are out of position, especially in the back and outside linebacker play is abysmal. It's a comment only, but we did ask for comments and questions. Any reaction?
Outside linebacker play is predicated on what's going on the inside. And since that's really struggling right now, that's going to struggle. In terms of the DC, I think we can look at that and say he's a little bit out of his depth right now. Mm-hmm. He looks kind of basic. So we'll see. We'll see what changes they make. I mean, it's hard to change anything midstream. That's going to be significant in that fashion because everything's kind of baked in right now. So you got two options. Either you coach better or you play better.
I don't disagree with that at all. And when I'm looking at Zach Orr, part of me is saying, I want to make sure we don't lose this guy. I think he is a good young football coach. I think he's extremely relatable. I think, you know, if there's a troublemaker who doesn't like him, I don't have any problem at all with saying I'll go with Zach Orr over the troublemaker. The problem is in terms of adaptability and the rapidity of adaptability in terms of what Orr is doing. And there are some things I've really liked about what he's done. I thought going to some of the rush concepts he had at the end of the game was the only way to try and go after it. It didn't happen to work out. I thought that going to the dime, what he did this year, whether he's told to or not, I don't really care. He did his best he could once that happened. And they put together defensive efforts that were good enough to win those five straight games. But we got another person with a question that's very similar in the same vein, but this is from KM. Let me see, make sure I'm seeing this. My eyes are betraying me now. KMFFL Productions. He says, what do you think are the lessons fans, players, and coaches take from losses over wins? Everything that happened versus Cleveland happened versus Cincinnati too. Should people expect changes just because Humphrey made that pick and Hamilton dropped his? Great point.
Like I said at the beginning of the show, this Cleveland game was the culmination and everything that has been wrong with this team defensively. Everything that was a problem showed up in this game. Running back issues, miscommunication, bad calls, pass rush wasn't there. depth on the D line, not as much as we thought. The corners after Humphrey were still some question marks. It all showed up. Mm-hmm. Everything was there for the picking. So you don't have to go looking around through the first seven games or what the problems were. Just throw in the Cleveland game and that'll explain everything that's been a problem.
Yeah, I think that is my big difference between the Cleveland and Cincinnati games. Yes, both games were close and they were lost at the end, but the Cincinnati game, it was more a case of two great quarterbacks kind of picking the opposing defense apart. And I was less concerned about that, frankly, than I am about getting beat by a veteran journeyman like Winston, who's hardly started in the last few years. And, is basically, he's not even figuring out what he needs to do to beat you. He's just throwing the ball up where he sees an opportunity. And it doesn't matter that it's Jalen Armour Davis or Marlon Humphrey over there. It doesn't matter at all to him. And that's why he doesn't throw every ball over in that direction. We got a question that's right up your alley, but I think we've handled enough on the show, but I do want to give Brad McGowan a shout out for coming up. Hey Ken, as fans of the Dime and Hamilton near the line of scrimmage, despite that, at what point do you think the Ravens are better off using him on the back end and playing Simpson more in last year's queen role? So committed nickel is what he's talking about. We've addressed this at length here, Brad. So I did want to acknowledge the question here, but I see Denard smiling at that one. We've got our two sides to that, but I do appreciate having you on to talk about that, Denard.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to find solutions. And if Harbaugh is true to his words, everything's on the table.
Yep. And it could be, if we see the Dime is no longer in play and Trenton Simpson is back to in there as committed nickel from here on in, as he was in this game because they were really shorthanded by Williams, then I think, you've seen the willingness to adapt to the personnel. I think it's a positive sign from the coaching staff that it happens, even though I don't necessarily think it's going to be the best way that they fit together in total or the way that they should be trying to maybe acquire players to fill out the roster. If they acquired another free safety again, I think that might be a better choice.
Yes. If there's a difference, I think if you're going to put the top two needs of this team, it's interior D line and safety. And you can flip them however way you want to put it.
I'm right there with you. Right there with you. All right. Randy Morgan says, when do they have to seriously consider firing Orr? Not unprecedented, considering we did it the year we won the Super Bowl. He's talking about releasing Cam Cameron at midseason. He's not talking about the defensive side. Ravens have never had an in-season firing of a defensive coordinator. If they did, is there anyone who could step in and make the unit at least average? Pease, Belichick, or Rex being three suggested names.
Well, no to Belichick, because that would never happen. I would burn down the road before Rex showed up. And if you're going to make a move like that, that's kind of why you brought Pease in as kind of the advisor. See if some things will happen. I don't think, like you said, I don't think you let Orr go. I think he needs to see it work successfully and how that works on a day-to-day basis, like Mike McDonald did at Michigan. He just needs some confidence. Eventually, if you get a little confidence in yourself, you start understanding what's in front of you. And you got to remember, he's a former linebacker. He understands what's going on around him. He's just got to translate it in his head. And right now, he's just slow about it.
I actually, of those names, I don't think Rex would work because I think that Rex and Harbaugh have a history. And Ray Lewis was saying, you know who the real head coach of that team was in 2008 when Harbaugh first arrived. He's claiming that Rex Ryan is the head coach. I don't think Harbaugh would have him back.
No.
I think he would say a no on that. And I think it still has silo to hire in, and Bisciotti really believes in that. The guy I think is the interesting choice is Belichick. And if Harbaugh and possibly also DaCosta, even though it's not in his silo, came out and said, you know what, if you spend $5 million on Bill Belichick this year, I bet we can at least get to the AFC Championship, then I think that might be something they'd be willing to consider. But it is enormous thing. And in a sense, isn't that kind of the best situation to give you a chance to keep Orr? Is to say, hey, Zach, I got some tough love I got to give you. It's not working out right now on defense. We want to keep you as linebacks coach. We're bringing in Bill Belichick, and you're still defensive coordinators in waiting because Belichick is 70-some years old, and he wants to spend his time with his 24-year-old girlfriend.
I mean, he is from the Maryland area. Wouldn't have to go too far. I mean, if you felt like that was going to be the move, that's fine. But at the end of the day, a lot of their issues are already baked in. They were baked in from camp. And it's hard. Offensively, you can change some things. You can change some play calling. You can change some formations. And you know, it'll loosen some things up. It's hard on defense to change things without changing the complete philosophy of what's going on.
I agree with that. One of the philosophical changes you could have, you alluded to earlier, was you don't want a high risk defense that's going with your high potent offense. I think Belichick, because he's got the background as a head coach, of course, is going to be very good at the game management component of defense.
Yes,
he's going to be able to have them play prevent when they should play prevent, when it's really appropriate to do it. And I think more than just about anybody you can put on the sidelines for an NFL game, he's going to be a guy who knows how much risk you need to take on defense to get the desired result. And defense needs risk to win. You can't win by giving up average yards all the way down the field.
Yeah.
Any opposing offense will just move it with you at will. So they have to take risks. They have to get penalties. They have to get sacks. They have to get stops in the backfield. They have to do sets of incompletions, penalties. I mean, Belichick, I think, would know how to manage that. And that's the reason why I'm even entertaining this in my head right now.
Yeah, they're missing the game management portion of this. That's why, going back to what I was talking about with the weird calls down in the red zone where you shouldn't be running a zone blitz on third and seven. Like, no, like that's just, you're just giving away a quick throw that you don't need to give away. Just those little things that'll change the course of the game. I think, yeah, if you're looking for someone, I'm sure I'd go with Belichick. But once again, I just feel like it's not going to change the overall nature of what's going on right now.
Got one more, and then we're going to have to call it a day here. This is from Shay Oren, who says, given the miscommunication issues, would you consider taking the green dot from Smith and giving it to Hamilton? Hamilton's got a lot to consider in terms of his own personal responsibility. Yep.
No, it's not. The communication is not the play call. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. The communication is pre-snap, post-snap, and then during the snap. Guys are not talking. You can see that on the field. Guys are not talking. They're not talking about crossers. They're not doing this. And at the end of the play, a bunch of guys are pointing at each other like, oh, you should have been there. Oh, you should have been there. That was your guy.
And some of that extends back to the classroom, I would contend, is that they're not really spending the amount of time to understand it. It was one of the things we heard about McDonald early on was that, you know, not only did you understand the big picture of the defense, and maybe that made it easier to understand, but you understood what somebody else's role was, not just yours, and how yours fit with them. The Ravens need to get back to that. At least, let me say, that sounds a lot better than what we have right now. So I'm hoping some of this is personnel. I mean, this last game, a lot of it is just the personnel on the field are not good enough to compete even with the Cleveland Browns, as hard as that is to hear. That was part of the problem, but a lot of it was missed opportunities and some miscommunication this last game too.
Cleveland's a very good, very talented football team. They're just not very good, very well coached in a lot of situations.
All right, Denard, such a pleasure to have you on. Appreciate you taking extra time with me tonight to have some of these really interesting discussions. I think got a great mailbag. Really appreciate you fans for writing in on this one. But Denard, tell folks where they can find your show or contact you online.
You can find me at Denard13 on Twitter, as well as the Fire Zone show on Twitter. And you can find my show on the Fire Zone with myself and Mike Crawford.
Michael Crawford, longtime friend of the show and one of the great guests of all time. One of the most fun people to talk football with. So I really envy your position of having a regular show with him, Denard, I got to say. Other folks out there, let's see, what do we want to talk about right now? If you'd like to do something for the show, please introduce somebody else to it. Always nice to get a like and subscribe, even though I don't really push the YouTube committee community at all, but like and subscribe there will help drive some more traffic here. If you can write a 50-word review for us, always appreciate that. Anytime you can just show somebody else the website and how to click on a play button for somebody my age in particular, that'll help them if they're not really a podcast person. Denard, really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me on. Much appreciated.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.